For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Well, no, I mean, I led this thing myself. Ultimately, as a GM, I always talk to my owner in terms of, you know, giving him my thought process. And, you know, I talk to Jim, but I pretty much led the process.
All right, that was Dana Brown on Friday talking about releasing Jose Abreu. So Dana Brown is taking ownership of the decision to finally cut him loose. I think it's safe to assume this was a group decision, given all the people involved in bringing Abreu in. As Dana Brown, as you'll hear in a moment, Dana Brown pointed out, this is a transaction that took place before he took over as the general manager.
Right, yeah.
But very much a process in unloading Jose Abreu that Dana Brown probably... Hey, guys, you know, like, hey.
Like, at some point, everything was complicated with all of this because Jose Abreu had such a nice stretch in September and October of last year. I think that's at least part of it. It's that, man, if he had never had that run at the end, then it might have been a lot easier to say, all right, well, all is lost.
Yes.
The other part of it that made it kind of difficult is that this was, in terms of declines at the end of a career that aren't really specifically tied to injuries or big injuries, even though he's been banged up a little bit. It was a drastic decline. And I think that Bagwell was probably correct when he said that the analytics people were on board with signing Jose Abreu last year. Now, I don't know if they were on board with the numbers or anything else like that, but I will partially excuse them for not anticipating that the decline would be this bad. Now, sticking by him when he was really just not showing any signs of improving after the West Palm Beach experiment and all of that, yeah, Dana Brown is at least, he's attached to that. I don't know how much of a driving force he was with all of that, but he's attached to that. Yep. So he can't distance himself completely from it.
We played multiple clips earlier in the show of Dana Brown to various degrees, I think, pointing out that of the Abreu signing preceded his becoming general manager here. I'll just play the one that I think most indicates Dana Brown, like, pointing out, hey, you know, hey, I don't know, man. I wasn't here when they signed Jose Abreu.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the end. You know, last year Pujols got released and he ended up with the Cardinals and, you know, did a pretty good job there. But as far as his legacy in the game, I mean, the guy was an MVP. That's very hard to do in the major leagues. And so, when you guys signed him prior to me getting here, I think this guy was on the market. There were a lot of teams that liked him. And so ultimately, a first baseman he had close to an 850 OPS for his career. And so, you know, he had a good run. He had a really good run, signed in international. The international signing.
We're good, Ben. We're good. Yeah, when you guys signed, that just.
Did he pull out a baseball card and look at the back of it?
It tickles
not?
Me. This is going to do some serious damage. This whole sequence of events the last couple weeks, really the last couple months.
Yeah.
By months, I mean years, are really going to do some damage to the back of that old baseball card right there.
Tops the industry itself, Sean,
yes.
I think. The Astros have done irreparable damage to Tops, and I expect a lawsuit at some point.
Class action lawsuit for
anybody. You've devalued the back of the baseball card.
That's it. Now, Dana Brown, some good news in the system here. I think if there were if you look at Dana Brown's background and you go, okay, what's the reason why Dana Brown got this job as general manager of the Astros? I would say it's his ability, this Atlanta Braves baseball team, which is one of the most talented in baseball when it's fully healthy,
yeah.
even when they're not healthy, they're still super talented. They're missing Spencer Strider and Ronald Acuna, and it's still a really good baseball team. Dana Brown had huge responsibility in putting that team together in the scouting and the drafting of that team. And he's had one draft to be the GM of the Astros, and so far so good, as Astros Future tweeted out, Seth. There's several guys here that are already at double A from their draft class, and they're putting up pretty big numbers right
from
now.
From the 2023 draft class, Bryce Matthews, Jake Bloss, Jaron Williams, and Ferreras, that kid. Like, those guys, they've so far been good draft picks. And I think a lot of the, I don't know, if you go into the Moneyball, you know, dynamic of old school scouts versus analytical dudes and everything, it's not nearly as big a divide as it once was, but there is still a little bit of that. And I do think that Dana Brown falls more into an old school scout who does a lot of the old school things, but he also has an appreciation of and utilizes the analytics. I feel like if you're an old school person, there's probably something about Dana Brown just simply drafting well and recognizing prospects that can elevate quickly that you got to feel good about. But taking that long-term view of like, hey, yeah, boy, 2 or 3 years from now when all these draft picks start potentially reaching the major leagues, then that's where you're really cooking. We're impatient with that because we feel like we're still in the World Series window for these Astros.
Yeah, that's what,
at least we did not too long ago.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, do you think Dana Brown wants to be a buyer at the deadline this year? Because on the one hand, if you're a buyer, it means you're relevant again. But on the other hand, if you're a buyer, it means that what I think he probably views as his putting his fingerprints on the future of this organization gets gutted to some degree, you know?
Well, he had actually mentioned in one of his clips that he wasn't gung-ho about trading prospects.
Yeah.
Obviously, you can't trade picks, but trading prospects for a current player. It would be a player-for-player swap of some sort. Okay. Is what it sounded like.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that makes sense. And honestly, that's where this team is. It's hard, and this I fall into this trap. For years, the Astros pipeline would be ranked pretty low. But meanwhile, like, guys like Jeremy Peña weren't in the top 100 prospects. The people that put together those rankings and ratings were ignoring guys like Framber Valdez or Christian Javier or Jeremy Peña, and the Astros were just kind of evaluating guys on a different basis. I think everything like has kind of closed in now to where, all right, the pipeline deficits are way more real now than they were before.
Yeah, the rankings match what reality probably looks like.
Yeah, so it's a plea for the long play that's never feels as good in the moment. You know, no. Hey, don't worry, everything's going to be fine 3 years from now.
No. Boy, and yet a Pete Alonso trade would get me pretty fired up right now. Getting that bat in the middle of the lineup would be good. But might cost you a couple of these guys that you just named that got called.
Alonso, I mean, but the whole thing with Alonso too is that he's not having an awesome year. Or if Goldschmidt, perhaps, like some of the names out there. I like the idea of Alonso, but it comes with, hey, all right, yeah, he's been kind of slow in the first half of the season, but maybe this spark of coming to this team is going to be what turns him around. So I don't have an insatiable appetite for Pete Alonso.
I need to see how many of his fly balls to left field would have been home runs in Minute Maid Park. That's what I need.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a website somewhere that will tell me where I can go find everywhere that Pete Alonso's fly balls were caught this year. And then I can do an overlay of Minute Maid Park and go, wow, well, 8 of these would have been home runs at Minute Maid Park. And now all of a sudden we're talking about Pete Alonso being in the home run derby and having big numbers. I don't know. The ballpark is nice and tailored to him. But
It's not like he's been bad or anything. He's not playing at an all-star level necessarily.
No.
He's got a 781 OPS, but he's also, he's 29 years old. I don't think he's going to all of a sudden age into a decrepit old man the way Jose Abreu did.
I don't either. He's a rental, though. Like, have him for the rest of this year, and then he's a free agent after this year. And that is one thing Dana Brown mentioned as well on Friday about, when he started, the conversation shifted from Abreu to, okay, where do we go from here? Yeah. He pointed that out. He said, look, even the Verlander trade last year, we traded two really good prospects for Verlander. It's because we had him under contract for 23, 24, and if he hits 140 innings, 25. at a nice rate because the Mets are footing the bill for it, you know, for most of it, half of it, you know, a big chunk of it.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The big question will be, all right, you know, we went over John Singleton's numbers yesterday of how he did while Jose Abreu was down on his minor league assignment. Excuse me, rookie league assignment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was he was putting up basically Pete Alonso's numbers during that break. So the question is now, maybe over these next few weeks, you start to see how John Singleton does, and if he sustains kind of that performance when he was getting more regular at-bats and playing time, then you can solely focus perhaps on a starting pitcher, especially if you start thinking about, man, maybe Yiner needs to play some more first base, because catcher trying to do both hit and catch might be, at one point it was harming the baseball side of thing. Now it looks like it might be harming the catching side of things.
Yeah.
So in my heart of hearts, like, forget compensation and everything else like that. A starting pitcher would be really, really nice.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, no, definitely. That and that's the, you know, that's the double whammy in the decision to try to stick it out another month with Abreu, is you may have had a solution at first base that was totally viable, and you it's like you're sticking a pin in a balloon, and now Singleton is having to ramp back up to get back to being a 787 OPS guy. It was really looking like Singleton was taking to the at-bats, you know?
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate. Very unfortunate. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
It's one of the great tragedies of our time, Sean.
Really is.
It'll be in history books.
Shakespearean, for
the
sure.
The uncensored ones, yes.
Shakespearean. That's what did I hear Shakespeare? Oh, it was last night. Amy and I got watching the 30 for 30 about June 17th, 1994. The day of the Bronco chase, and on that same day, like, the Stanley Cup Finals in New York parade was going on, and the Rockets were playing. It was like the World Cup was going on in the United States. It was like the biggest day of sports, especially when you throw OJ into it. And that was, they had a lot of the NBC footage on there of the Bronco chase. And, you know, they're cutting over to Tom Brokaw from the NBA Finals. Kostas is tossing it to Brokaw, and he's like, thanks, Bob. And over here, we have a tragedy of Shakespearean proportions playing out on the freeways of Los Angeles. You know,
oh, Kostas.
Yeah. No, it was Brokaw doing that. Yeah.
Oh, Brokaw, okay. But
Kostas was probably pretty jealous. Shakespearean. I wish I'd used that.
I have no idea. Is that Shakespeare? I guess it is kind of like probably... There might be a little bit more folly involved with Shakespeare. There's nothing funny about the OJ chase, really.
No. But you know what Brokaw knew? 97% of the people aren't even going to think that deeply about it. They're going to be like, wow, yeah, big word, Shakespearean.
You know what helped me out when I got into college and I was kind of dabbling around, like taking some English classes and stuff? Was like, at a certain point, I realized, like, oh, all these highfalutin, like, wannabe intellectuals, they're doing the exact same thing me and my buddies do, which is like quoting Fletch or quoting Caddyshack or whatever. Like, they're just doing it with different source material.
Yes.
It's like, oh, okay. I'm awesome at this. I can drop in a catchphrase like nobody's business. But then people think you're super smart if you do it. You just got to read the actual stuff.
Yeah,
and then there you go. I cracked the code. It was no different than quoting Caddyshack.
It's the same thing. I'm just quoting smarter, stranger versions of English here. Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. There is a college football coach who is hopping mad right now at the school he used to work at. He's suing them right now. He's suing them for wins. We'll let you hear this. If I had to pick a coach who's doing this.
That was downright Shakespearean,
Sean.
The way you did that, yes.
Shakespearean.
I appreciated that.
Bordering on Machiavellian, yes. We'll tell you all about it next.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.